Welcome to Birthplace of Next, the City of Dayton's podcast. My name is Todd Kinski. I'm the Director of Planning, Neighborhoods, and Development. I'm here this morning with Montgomery County Treasurer, John McManus. Welcome welcome to the show.
Glad you could
be with us. So this morning we're going to be talking about lot links. We're talking about the administrative foreclosure process and how that works, how it doesn't work. And some of the issues that are at play right now. So again, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to jump right into the questions if that's okay with you. So the first one is, how does lot links work from a county perspective, and why was the treasurer a part of the program?
Great question. And Todd, thank you again for having me. It's great to be here, and looking forward to this discussion today. The Lot Links program was a partnership, if you will, and let me preface this by saying its establishment and eventual dissolution was before my time as treasurer. But Lot Links was a partnership between the City of Dayton and the Montgomery County Treasurer's Office. And the Treasurer's Office was a necessary party because Lot Links was a vehicle for acquiring property through the foreclosure process. What was different about Lot Links was that it was what we call an expedited foreclosure. It's an administrative foreclosure. And why is the treasurer involved in that process at all? It's because the treasurer serves as the plaintiff in all tax foreclosures in Montgomery County. And I'm happy to tell you a little bit about how it works, if you'd like. So in Ohio, under state law, there is a provision of the law that allows for these expedited foreclosures. Obviously, most folks know about, you know, what a foreclosure is generally. That's generally where a property is, in the end, put up for sale through a sheriff's sale after a court case in which one party is seeking to recover debt, and that is settled through real estate. Again, that involves a court and eventually a sheriff's sale. Lot links and expedited foreclosures are entirely different. So essentially how that works is, and still under the law, a city, a local government, or land bank is able to submit to the county treasurer an application on a tax delinquent property for expedited foreclosure. Rather, at that point, and assuming the property is indeed eligible, rather than the property going to court, the property then heads to the Board of Revision. Now, most people know the Board of Revision is the body where homeowners can appeal their value, but the Board of Revision serves another purpose, it being expedited foreclosures, the adjudicating body. So who's on the Board of Revision? The county treasurer, the county auditor, and the chair of the county commission, our representatives. So when that property eventually makes its way to the Board of Revision to be adjudicated through an expedited foreclosure, that foreclosure is done administratively there at the Board of Revision rather than in the court. Following that adjudication, that property then reverts back to the filer, i.e. the city, so rather than going to sheriff's sale. So it's much, much different logistically than a judicial tax foreclosure where you have a sheriff's sale and the highest bidder obviously gets the property and there was a court process, etc. This is an administrative foreclosure. So that's how lot links worked. Somebody could come into the city, put in an application. The city would then work with the treasurer to push this property through an expedited foreclosure administratively with the Board of Revision. It would be adjudicated, and then that property would revert back to the city. And then obviously, you know, city staff would then work with the applicant to then do with that property what he or she was intending to do.
Okay, John, so my understanding is that the expedited process came about as a result of the housing foreclosure crisis. in the late teen or 2008-2009. Now, who has standing besides the city to submit through expedited review?
The land bank.
Is that pretty much the only? A private citizen just can't come and just file with Board of Revision for expedited.
Right. No, they cannot do that with the treasurer. Okay. You know, they would have to go to their local government, i.e., their local city, and then the city would you know need to work with the treasurer, which is exactly what LotLinks was.
Okay. Excellent. Mm-hmm. So, from your perspective, what were the issues with the previous LotLinks program?
Great question. You know, and I think, and I was a private citizen. Well, no, I wasn't. I was a member of the Dayton Board of Education, but I was not the treasurer at the time. You know, and I think certainly LotLinks had a lot of merit. It helped a lot of people get properties, whether it was for themselves or whether they were looking to acquire properties for investment purposes. And I thought it was a great, you know, it was great to see local residents being able to take part in that. Now, LotLinks from the perspective from the treasurer, again, and the treasurer serves as the county's tax collector. From our office's perspective, my understanding was there were significant issues related to these tax delinquent properties, because again, that's how these parcels were eligible in the first place for expedited foreclosure. There were many cases where individuals would acquire these properties and then essentially just sit on them. There wouldn't be a lot of effort to maybe rehabilitate these properties, which is more of a city issue than a treasurer issue. But along with that came, there were quite a few filers who then would not pay the property taxes on these properties. So what happens then? Well, if someone's acquired one of these properties through an expedited foreclosure, through LotLinks, they don't pay the taxes, those delinquencies continue to accrue. And then the treasurer has to turn right around and eventually either A, sell a tax lien on the property, or B, foreclose on it. And so from a treasurer's perspective, again, as the tax collector, that was an issue with the previous LotLinks program. As it stood, but you know there are, but again, you know that there were a lot of really good upsides, I think, to LotLinks. But you know, I don't want to speak for the city about you know what issues there may have been on the city's end with some of this. But from the treasurer's perspective, if there were any drawbacks, that was the most significant one. Is just these properties many of these properties would just continue to cycle through delinquency.
So essentially, you would foreclose, take the property from a private owner, their back taxes would be extinguished, property would be transferred to another owner to the city first, and then to the applicant, and then they would start accruing back taxes again. So kind of just cycling through the program.
It was. For many properties, that's exactly right. You know, which, and you think about it, if somebody's not paying the taxes on a property, and who knows, it could have been an out-of-town individual or an LLC. If they're not paying the property taxes, they're probably not sinking money into the property to improve it and help beautify the neighborhood and help make the quality of life for residents better. So, you know, that's always sad to see. So, yes, from a treasurer's perspective, that was, I think, the most significant drawback of the former LotLinks program.
Yeah, and I will say from the city, we had challenges. Certainly, as you say, there were lots of properties that were acquired, they were rehabbed, whether they were investments or folks living there. Lots of great stories. But I think those great stories were overshadowed by all of the frustrating situations we had either with LLCs or folks who would get the property and not have the resources to do the rehabilitation. I can tell you that we were frustrated ourselves with having some of those come back through the system more than once. We had issues with a lot of neighborhood groups and neighbors who were frustrated because the properties were transferred, all the impositions were wiped out, and then the new owner, you know, wasn't, you know, doing anything to improve the property. Mm-hmm. we definitely had challenges, and so I think it's fair to say anyone who had negative comments, they probably outweighed the positives. It definitely was a challenging program for the city to operate. So let's move on a little bit. So we've all heard about some of the litigation that's been out there relative to expedited foreclosures. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I know there's a lot going on, and just and explain to the listeners why that is affecting the whole process of the foreclosure, expedited foreclosure.
Great, thank you. The litigation that is still ongoing has been absolutely central to the strategy that I think so many local governments, county, et cetera, certainly my office, you know, that litigation has been central to strategies moving forward. And by central, I mean you have to keep that on the table when you're really planning out the future and what programs may be appropriate. So there were a number of cases filed some years ago, not that long ago, but about a couple of years ago, relative to expedited foreclosures. There were cases filed in state court. There were cases filed in federal court. And the plaintiffs, and by the way, these cases were filed, you know, here in Southwest Ohio. They were filed up north. And so it really has statewide effect, if you will. But the central argument behind some of these cases were from some of these plaintiffs who had been through this expedited foreclosure process. They were arguing that this program consisted of what's called an unconstitutional taking. You know, obviously under the law, and we all know property rights are sacrosanct in this country, and you know, you can't take anybody's property without due process, and that's very, very important, and I believe in that too. But the cases said, or the plaintiffs said, this is an unconstitutional taking. You're taking my property without due process. And so there was an attempt then also by counsel to essentially group all of the plaintiffs as a class to try and kind of go after a class action suit. Well, as these cases kind of made their way through the courts have kind of, they rejected the idea of a class certification. And some court rulings said that this is not a taking. They said, hey, it's there is adequate due process, because at any time in the expedited foreclosure process, the property owner, if the owner even, you know, shows up and contests the hearing, is able to, just by saying so, is able to eject his or her case from the Board of Revision to the Court of Common Pleas. And that court case then affords the property owner due process, and even more due process, if you will. So, you know, the courts have kind of been steadily, you know, ruling that way here in Ohio. Well, just to give you an example of how the legal landscape shifts every now and then, you know, I think it was just in late October, a court in Michigan held that there was at least an aspect of a taking here if the property's value exceeded the impositions on the property. And I'll get to why that's important here in a minute. Now, Michigan's expedited foreclosure process is very different from Ohio's, but the same substantive issues, if you will, there are being litigated. Why it's important in Michigan is because that's in the same, you know, the same federal district as ours. So with these cases moving through both federal and state courts, you have to keep that in mind. Now, obviously, it's the responsible thing in government to do. If there is ongoing litigation in something, government has, you know, has a duty to ensure that the processes in place are safe, if you will, and that, you know, any kind of pending litigation wouldn't adversely affect
So you're talking about risk.
That's right. Yes. Risk. Yes. Risk adverse.
That's right.
That's right. And you have to be. Governments have to be. They have a responsibility to be. You know, we all have rules and regs that we have to live within, and court cases are part of that. So, you know, with these court cases still ongoing, and this is very important, expedited foreclosures, the eligibility rules had to change. So in the past, it was pretty much, hey, if there's a tax delinquent property out there and that delinquency is certified, you know, then it's eligible for this program. Well, now, in response to this litigation, we have had to tailor back the eligibility criteria to be, you know, in compliance, if you will, with this ongoing litigation, whereby a property is not eligible for expedited foreclosure unless the value of the property, the auditor's assessed value, is lower than the impositions on the property, i.e. the delinquent taxes and the assessments. Now, why is that important, and how big of a shift is that? We ran a report. I think it was 70 or 80% of tax delinquent properties now, probably close to 80%, are not eligible for expedited foreclosures. So, you know, even if there was like a lot links, if it was still in existence, number one, only 80% of properties that would have been eligible would no longer be eligible. And so you're kind of left with the bottom 20%. And think about what that looks like. You know, somebody who's wanting to acquire a property where the delinquency exceeds the home's value, you're probably getting more of a problem than you are an asset. You're going to have to sink in a lot of money on structural issues, environmental issues, safety issues. You know, that's a real big commitment. And, you know, it's by no means the same, you know, as it used to be. And by the way, you remember lot lengths, the property had to be, you know, abandoned, neglected, no utilities. So there were a lot of criteria, but the litigation is very, very important to any future planning around programs. You know, literally the only place this has to go, these cases have to go now. The only court in which an appeal would be allowed is the United States Supreme Court. That's it. They've hit the end of the road other than the Supreme Court. So, you know, will these decisions be appealed to the justices of the Supreme Court? Maybe. I don't know. The future will tell. But, you know, if there are any lawyers listening, if you want review by the United States Supreme Court, that is a whole process. And it takes a long time. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But the county and cities and everybody all across the state, we have a responsibility to ensure that the programs that are in place, they are done responsibly. They are done in compliance with the legal situation. But this litigation is a real thorn in the side of future planning. It really is. And there's no way to get around that.
So what you're basically saying is until some future ruling, this is the landscape we're dealing with for now.
That's right, for now.
So impositions greater than value.
They have to be. They have to be.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to move on just a little bit. It's related, but what we're talking about here is delinquent properties and how they can be acquired.
Mm-hmm.
So when we ended lot links here at the city, we pushed towards the deposit or foreclosure process. So what does that mean, and can you explain that just a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. The depositor foreclosure program, and I'll kind of tee it up next to lot links and tell you how they're different, because this is really important. I get questions all the time. Does Montgomery County have a program where I as an investor or me as a possible homeowner can go after a tax delinquent property? Yes, and it's called the depositor foreclosure program. That program is ran exclusively by the treasurer's office. There is no involvement with local municipalities on that one, you know, like expedited foreclosures. So a depositor foreclosure, what is that? Depositor foreclosure program allows an individual, as long as they do not owe delinquent taxes themselves, they can come into the treasurer's office, fill out an application. On that application, they will specify the tax delinquent property that they are interested in, and along with a deposit. That's why it's called deposit or foreclosure. The deposit that's required for a residential property is $2,000. For commercial industrial is $3,000. Once the treasurer's office receives that application and the deposit, we then obviously do our due diligence, do a PJR, preliminary judicial review on the property, and at that point, assuming that the property is indeed eligible, we then work with the prosecutor. The prosecutor then treats that case just like any other tax foreclosure and gives it a case number and puts it into the court system. There's then a court case, just like any other tax foreclosure, and following that court case, assuming it is successful on the part of the plaintiff, i.e. the treasurer, that property then goes to sheriff's sale. At that point, the depositor is then free to participate in that sheriff's sale, where the depositor, if he or she wants the property, has to be the highest bidder. So if the depositor is the highest bidder, the deposit is credited towards the sale. If they're not, then they receive most of their deposit back.
And that deposit is how much?
$2,000 for residential, $3,000 for commercial industrial. And that's really important. Now, one thing to note with expedited foreclosures through lot lengths, the property had to be abandoned, neglected, no occupants, including squatters. but with depositor foreclosure, the property does not have to be abandoned. It just has to be tax delinquent. It has to be certified delinquent. Now, one thing I always tell folks out in the community is, number one, this is a court case, meaning the property owner has every right to redeem his or her debt, meaning pay off the delinquent taxes, and the property gets kicked out of foreclosure. So that's always a possibility. And again, it's a court case. Sometimes, it can take a year or so, maybe less. The court system is moving a lot faster than it was during COVID. And again, the person has to be the highest bidder if they want that property. But it's not limited to the city of Dayton, like lot links was. It is countywide. And so, if you live in Dayton, but you want to go after a house in Moraine or Huber or anywhere, you're free to do that. It is a countywide program. And again, the restrictions on occupancy and things of that nature, like there were under lot lengths, are not there under depositor foreclosure. So and by the way, this is important too. I always tell the applicants, well, our office tells the applicants, and me when I'm out in the community presenting on it, the applicant's name will not be in the court filings. That's really important, because if an individual is, for instance, doing a depositor foreclosure on his or her neighbor, that person probably doesn't want their name on the court documents. I, as treasurer, list my name as the plaintiff because I am. But depositor foreclosure is a way for individuals in the community to essentially not wait on the county to get around to foreclosing on a property if an individual really wants to acquire that property. If they don't want to wait, they can do depositor foreclosure. And so it's really a way for residents to essentially force the hand of the county. And I think that's great. And by the way, you don't see this in a lot of small and mid-sized counties. I think it may even be statutorily limited to larger counties. So that program has grown exponentially in this real estate market. And individuals out there, if you were ever interested in depositor foreclosure, you can reach out to the treasurer's office and speak, or come up to our office on the second floor of the county building and speak to our delinquency department. I also have a list of tax delinquent properties on the website that the auditor's office publishes. And so we're happy to work with anybody if they have questions on depositor foreclosure.
Thank you for that explanation. The obvious complaint from folks that we hear is that, unlike the assuredness you would have through lot links where you are going to be the recipient, the under foreclosure, you could be outbid. So mm-hmm. you're losing that certainty. Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side is that the treasury, the county mm-hmm. treasury, is receiving more money for the property, and that's good for property taxes, and the county, mm-hmm. you know, that's your job to collect that.
That's right.
So
indeed.
So to that end, we've had folks who have said, let's bring back lot links, let's bring back the program. And I know you have made, you know, obviously today, and I've witnessed in person, you know, you talking about the good qualities of the program. But I guess the real question is, could it come back at, you know, mm-hmm. in any form? And if so, what would that look like? You know, where do you stand on that?
Great.
Do you want to elaborate on that
Great.
Question?
Great. Absolutely. And by the way, you raised a good point about property taxes. Expedited foreclosure, that's a really good point. When there's an expedited foreclosure, the treasurer's office does not collect those delinquent taxes, which means the county does not distribute them. Which means the local school districts, who are the main beneficiaries of those taxes, do not get them at all when there's an expedited foreclosure. With a judicial foreclosure, we collect those delinquent taxes and they are then distributed according to the law. But where do I stand on lot links? I thought it was a great program. Of course, there were some significant issues. Would I be open to conversations at maybe a lot links 2.0? Absolutely, I would. I think, you know, it is my job to look at the landscape, look at delinquencies, and to see what's out there and is able for collection. There are a lot of tax delinquent properties in larger counties in Ohio, including Montgomery. And so anything that could help chip away at that landscape from a treasurer's perspective is great, because it then puts those properties, assuming that the owner pays property taxes, it then puts those properties back on the ordinary tax roll, and that's great for everybody. So, yes, I'm absolutely open to discussions about bringing back a program like Lot Links. I think, obviously, well, number one, we need to see where the litigation goes. I mean, what would be a huge disservice to people would be bringing it back, you know, with all these great aspirations, only to see you know, it dashed for one reason or another. And even if we were to bring it back right now, you remember 80% of the properties that would have been eligible no longer are, at least under the current rules. But, you know, if everything settles down and we get back to an ordinary landscape, absolutely. I think there need to be some guardrails there. There needs to be some assurances. You know, assurances that people are going to pay their taxes, that they have adequate financial resources to maybe fix up the property if it's a real, you know, problem for the neighborhood. There needs to be some responsibility guardrails, if you will, that ensure that property is an asset after it is acquired. And there were a lot of applicants who did that. There were a lot of applicants who took it upon themselves to improve that property for the betterment of the neighborhood. But there were some applicants who just did not. And that didn't serve anybody well. You know?
Well, I appreciate that. And I would just add that so that we know the County Land Bank runs a program that is essentially Lot Links. It goes through I think they call it their tax foreclosure acquisition program.
Yes, yes.
But as I understand it, they're not applying. They're not running cases through the Board of Revision because of that 80-20 rule there. What's out there for foreclosure is the conditions of the buildings are in such that the investment you'd have to make doesn't make financial sense.
Right.
So I know that that's a program that is probably what a 2.0 program would look like, just in terms of assuring responsible owners have the financial resources to do the work. But I guess the point to the folks who are out there listening is that program really is Lot Links, and it's not operating really because of the fact of what the impact of the litigation.
Right.
So
right.
We're really in a holding pattern until something changes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Todd, you raise a good point too about, you know, again, about the 80-20 rule. And what are we referring to by that? It's, you know, that like probably about 80% of the properties wouldn't qualify because they have to be, the value has to be lower than the delinquent taxes and the assessments. Think about for a minute what it takes, how long it takes for a property to acquire delinquencies and assessments that are more than the home's value itself. Think about the time it takes. All the while, that house is probably sitting neglected. You know, individuals, you know, along with not paying their taxes, they're probably not making improvements to the property. So by the time it gets to where the impositions are greater than the value, think about what time has meant to the very structure of the home itself. And so, you know, again, I know everybody out there wants to acquire investment properties and maybe a home for themselves, but would it even be, you know, fair at the moment to bring a program back with, you know, getting people's hopes up, only to offer them properties where that's the condition of the property? I don't know.
Well, and the other thing too is that, you know as well as I do, that those are properties that are owned by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody, not the city, not the county, mm-hmm. has the legal ability to tell the potential applicant. They can go through the property and see the condition.
Great point.
It's a guess. You don't know if the floors have collapsed. You don't know if the copper's been stolen.
Great point.
And many of those properties have been boarded by the city, and you know, we're trying to keep folks out of the building.
Yes.
There could have been a fire in the building. I mean, there could be asbestos, environmental issues, and so it is a total guess.
You
and
are so right.
It's a big risk. It makes it even more of a challenging situation when we're looking at that,
yes.
that 20%. You know?
Yes.
So
you're so right. And by the way, and you raise a great point. You know, with foreclosure sales, what you just said is very important. That property belongs to somebody else. It's not like a showing where the owner wants you to come through and is enticing you and has an open house. That's owned by somebody else, and they probably don't want to lose their house. They're not welcoming you in. And to your point about the floor caving in, you have no way of knowing. It's sight unseen. And just like my tax foreclosure sales, which by the way are the first Thursday of the month at 10 a.m. in the county building, folks who are sitting there in the audience, unless they have an intimate knowledge of that house prior to when it was tax delinquent, you know, you just don't know what the condition of the property is. And so can you imagine the condition of these properties where they have to be upside down? You'd be walking into a lot of really unfortunate structural issues, I would imagine.
Well, John, I want to thank you for your time this morning. We could probably talk about this for a long time.
Indeed.
It's an intriguing topic and one that we're all concerned about. So again, welcome or thank you for being on the Birthplace Next podcast here at the city, and we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Todd. It's always a pleasure working with you. Thanks to what you and your 100 staff members do for the city. I know it's a huge job, but I'm grateful for all you do, and thank you to the city commission, mayor, city manager for the opportunity to share a little bit about what we do at the treasurer's office. And to all those listening, it's an honor to serve you. And if you have any questions about anything you heard, please don't hesitate to come visit us at the treasurer's office. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.